from the Coppenburg Cross Party Tent, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, the weird world of predetermined races. Should fixed post-tour criteriums be banished to the history books, or are they a bit of fun that should be continued to be celebrated?
We will discuss, as well as giving our own experiences from our time doing those races. Plus, a new law in Canada that could make it illegal to drop your child off to school on a bike, a new gravel stage race that attracted some top stars, and a bike packing trip that Connor is confident that I would enjoy doing. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Ollie Bridgewood is the best climber at GCN, at least here in the UK branch, whilst Connor here is the worst at delivering his lines with a straight face. What's the aim, Connor?
I'm hoping to finish.
Hell. So enough about me anyway. What's your aim for today, Connor?
I'm hoping to finish.
What's your aim for today, Connor? Unbelievable. Some say you still haven't delivered that line, Connor. I was actually almost late to the start of my hill climb because that segment took so long.
Sorry, mate. Once I get the kickers, I find it so hard to compose myself.
Well, I think we all realise that, Connor. Yeah. I mean, when you say hard, it's about an hour long, wasn't it?
About that, on average, anyway. Right.
We also learnt the reason why Oya Lazcano went missing after Paris-Roubaix this year was due to anomalies in his blood passport, which was found by anti-doping testers.
Lazcano has been provisionally suspended by the UCI and his contract with Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe has been terminated.
For more details on that, check out yesterday's Racing News show. We're in quite in depth. Finally this week, we learned that predetermined races are still a thing.
Yeah, but over the weekend, Jonathan Milan won the Singapore Criterium, out-sprinting two of the other big-name riders there, Binyam Grmai and Jesper Philipsen.
Now, I sort of hope that this doesn't spoil things for any of the viewers watching this. Now, I'm pretty sure it won't, because I think most cycling fans at this point know how these things work. But that result would have been decided before the race had even started. So it was an exhibition race rather than a race or an actual race.
Yeah, I think before we got on to whether or not they still have a place in cycling, we should probably talk through kind of like the origins of these races.
No, you're right. We should, yeah, for people that are newer to the sport. Quite hard actually to pinpoint exactly when these post-tour criterions were first a thing, but it's a long time, isn't it? Probably the 1950s, maybe even before that. When they first started, things were very different in the sport of cycling to how they are now. So, A, television coverage was extremely limited, so the public didn't really get to see a lot of the big stars of pro cycling outside of the newspapers. B, salaries were much, much lower, and so those criteria were quite a substantial part of a rider's annual income. And C, social media didn't exist, so most people were blissfully unaware that those races were fixed.
Yeah, for many decades, they were incredibly popular for riders and fans alike. The riders themselves would kind of receive a starting fee based on how big their name was. And anyone who'd done particularly well at the Tour de France would command higher fees. Yeah. And it'd be possible to string together up to 20 criteriums in the month after the Tour de France.
Yeah. Which always blew my mind. Even the day after the Tour de France finished, they'd already be racing those criteriums. And this was back in days where the stage were much longer than they are now. So they'd then go travelling around France, Belgium and the Netherlands, racing almost every evening for a month.
Yeah, and even if they're not full-blown races, that is going to be tough.
Really tough,
isn't it?
I would say. I always balked at that. But anyway, the organisers would normally do quite well out of it as well. They would generally sort of cordon off a town or a village with barriers and then charge the public an entry fee to watch the race, which would be enough just not just to pay the riders their start fees, but still take profit for themselves as well.
Yeah, the riders would then get together before each race to decide how things were going to play out and then who'd cross the line first, second and third. Yep. The public was happy because they got to see the top stars in action.
And normally winning, the very top star.
And winning. Yeah. The riders were happy because they were being paid.
In cash, they were being paid as well.
Happy days. Cash.
Yeah. But then over the years, the number of post-tour criteriums in Europe has really dwindled. And I think there are a number of reasons behind that. And the main one is the riders now are very well paid by their team, so there's less need for sort of supplementary income. The second is that teams are more demanding of their rides, I'd say. So they probably don't want them getting really tired just after the Tour de France and ahead of the finer season races that are proper races. And I also get the sense there's probably a little bit less interest from the public, probably because of most are now aware that those races are fixed, but also because they can see so much more of cycling in general on TV and on social media.
However, for the last few seasons, we've had two ASO run criteriums at the end of the season in Singapore and Japan. The riders are paid a start fee and presumably get a business class flight
You'd
over, maybe,
so, yeah.
A nice hotel to
probably
stay in.
Yeah. But then the end result is still fixed, to the best of our knowledge, I should say. Now, before I give my opinion on them, could I just say, I feel bad for the commentators.
How come?
Well, how do you commentate it? I mean, do you pretend that it's a real race, which you know will make you look a bit silly to anyone that knows anything about bike racing? Or do you call it out for what it actually is? Probably not, because that would be really weird as well, wouldn't it? Anyway, I feel like I'm sort of getting off topic here. I personally think that these races are silly, but brilliant.
In what way?
Well, I mean, watching the predetermined attacks and chases and catches and sprints, it just looks a little bit silly on live TV. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
You've got to remember that this is a type of race that didn't used to be televised, of course, back in the day. But I sort of love the silliness at this point, and I think it's a great opportunity for people in Singapore and Japan, where there aren't many or any top-level pro races, to actually go out and watch the sports stars in action of sorts.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think especially in regions of the world where you just don't get as much pro racing, I think it's brilliant to be able to go to a race on the roadside, see the riders come past. It might not be a proper official race, but it's still really impressive, I think, to see people racing flat out on a bike zoom past. And that could be really inspirational for someone who might
almost flat out.
Almost
not
flat
quite, Connor, I would say. But it will still look fast, won't it? Have you ever done a fixed criterium, Connor?
Kind of.
What do you mean, kind of? This sounds tricky.
Yeah, well, it was supposed to be fixed.
Well, this is already sounding very fascinating. Tell us more.
So it's made one. It was at the Tour, Volta San Juan. Yeah. And there was this really grand team presentation the day before the race started. And part of the presentation was this kind of like fixed criterium where you kind of, everyone watched the presentation and they watched this race.
Right.
Didn't count as part of the official result. And it was supposed to be fixed and everyone was going to kind of take it easy. And that was what was agreed before we started.
Right.
But then I think the organisers sort of caught wind of this, that we weren't really going to race it. We were going to take it easy. And then suddenly in the presentation we were told that there was going to be cash throughout this crit.
Right.
So preams out at the finish.
So intermediate cash prizes and a big prize at the finish.
Yeah, and it was good cash as well. So suddenly everyone was actually going to race it.
Everybody?
Yeah, everyone really went for it.
So who,
seems to remember.
So it was a proper winner. Who won it?
I think my teammate won it, Matthias Brandl. Yeah. Mm. And we made an agreement to share the prize money.
Oh, very
so
good.
I enjoyed it. It was bizarre because I had my phone in my pocket, so I was taking photos while I was racing. So there's this photo that you can see now from the race.
Very nice. Yeah. I wasn't expecting that story, Connor.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
so basically, you've never done a fixed crit race?
I haven't done one of the true fixed crit races, no.
I have, because I'm older than you, Connor. So I actually had an agent based in the south of France who used to get me and my teammate Stephen Gallagher into a few of these post-tour crits. They were quite well paid, actually, especially bearing in mind that this was in like 2003 and 2004, when I was in a third division team. But we'd get like €500 of start money in cash, and then you'd have to give the agent 10%, which is not too bad, is it?
That's right, isn't it?
Especially if you could string a few together in a row. I remember we did one in a village called Marcolez, and George Hincapie turned up on his training bike. So firstly, it was really dirty. It also had a saddlebag and frame pump on it. So Stephen, my mate, had to tell him it might be an idea to take the saddlebag and frame pump off to make it look at least like he was taking things a little bit seriously.
Who knew? Me and George Hincapie had so much in
common. The frame bag, or saddle bag, I think it was. Yeah, I could see you turning up with your frame bag or handlebar bag on, guy. We also did a few in the Netherlands and Belgium as well, but they weren't quite paid quite so well, at least for me anyway. I'm sure they were for the top dogs. They actually weren't that easy, I would say, those fixed criteriums. Like, you're still having to go fast to make it look like a race, as we mentioned earlier. Oh, there was another one I did in a place called Kian a couple of times, right in the south of France near the Pyrenees. And that one was great because you could throw your empty bead on off to the side on the main street of the race. And in the next lap, that crowd would hand you back your bead on full of beer.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I can imagine you enjoyed that one.
It's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, sort of a kind of bygone era, I would say, really.
Yeah. Okay, right, time to throw it out to you guys at home. Are these criteriums a harmless bit of fun, or do you find them a little embarrassing to watch? Let us know what you think in the comments section below.
I'm looking forward to reading your comments. One thing that I did forget to mention, though, if it wasn't for these end-of-season crits, we would not get to see pro riders dressed up as sumo wrestlers or playing keep me up to what looks to be a shuttlecock, from what I just saw, or do sprint tests on a Wahoo kicker bike. I mean, I think they're fantastic events.
Yeah, they're different, that's for sure. Anyway, we look forward to reading your comments and let us know if there's anything similar in other sports, which we may not know about.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we'll start with the news that Tom Pidcock's version of a holiday in the off-season is heading to South Africa and taking on a massive 786-kilometre multi-day gravel stage race in the form of Nedbank Gravel Burn.
Despite being quoted as saying he didn't want to suffer there, the British Olympic mountain bike champ and Grand Tour stage winner took the win on the fifth stage, beating the likes of Matt Beers, Pete Stettiner and Simon Pollaud to take the stage win there. But it was Matt Beers who took the overall victory, I think, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. The race was marked by tough conditions throughout, with one stage neutralised due to high winds as riders took in seven stages across the Great Karoo of South Africa from the Western to the Eastern Cape. Beers did go on to take the overall win, as Dan said, in the men's race, while Axel Dubo-Prevot the women's.
That was quite an incredible ride, actually, because she started the final stage almost 9 minutes down, but then a combination of fantastic riding by her and some really bad luck for race leader at the time, Ashley Morman-Pascio, saw her create a real upset on that seventh and final day.
Yeah, moving on now to the biking lawyer over in Toronto, who I recently spoke to on the channel recently in a piece on road rage. He posted on his website, actually, highlighting an issue in Canada that he spotted in the law, namely regarding e-cargo bike use and who can or potentially can't ride one.
It's a funny one, this, isn't it? Yeah. So it comes after the premier in Toronto, Doug Ford, amended a law that effectively banned anyone under 16 from riding an e-bike, even as a passenger.
Yeah, so anyone dropping kids off to school in Canada, like I do here actually in the UK via e-cargo bike, is potentially breaking the law, which is pretty rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great.
It's like one of the most efficient, green, active ways to do the school run. And rather than be encouraged, it appears that the law would kind of be discouraging people here.
It is worth stating that there are no signs of active enforcement at this point so far, but still, definitely hope that the wording of this can be changed for people who do travel by e-cargo bike, because it just feels like a mistake in the wording as opposed to them really wanting to stop people, doesn't it?
I'd like to hope so. And actually, on the topic of e-bike commuting, rental city bike operator Lime Bike announced it was equipping 500 of its rental bikes with child seats over in Paris, moving away from a kind of like one bike fits all approach and recognising the need for being more inclusive to parents.
So they conducted a survey on riding needs before launching this, and they found that 70% of respondents found the school drops stressful. Half admitted to being late to school drop-offs. 50% of people used a personal vehicle for the school run, whilst only 6% used a bike. A whopping two-thirds, though, said a bike with a child seat would make these trips much easier. Good news there in Paris, then. Here in London, though, Lime Bikes were making headlines for the wrong reasons after this clip emerged of a worker mishandling bikes as they were pretty much thrown into position.
Yeah, bikes were damaged in the incident, with some commenters claiming this is a potentially regular occurrence, with these crews also paid to fix bikes and there is a kind of incentive to break them like this as a result. Total speculation there. There's quite a few comments actually wondering what was going on here, but still quite a shocking clip to watch either way.
Yeah, not great. Moving on, check out this new track bike from Colnago. It's called the T1 RS, and it follows on from the Super Aero Y1 RS, which was launched late last year, and has been the bike of choice for Tadej Pogacar at most races this season. It's the first dedicated track bike from the Italian brand since around 2018.
Definitely taking looks from the Y1 RS.
Which you love, don't you?
I do. Mm. I really like that bike. I think it's good, it's bold, it's out there. It has divided opinion, though, in terms of aesthetics. Anyway, Colnago say it's the fastest bike in their stable, optimised for speeds of 60 kilometres an hour, and also that it has a lower drag coefficient at 70 kilometres an hour than 50 kilometres an hour, which is pretty wild. Yeah, it's all due to, like, the turbulence of the wind at different speeds.
Doesn't sound like one for us. I need one that is better at 40 kilometres per hour on a track than at 70. We also spotted that the annual Dubai ride took place last week. So this is the sixth edition of the ride, which sees full road closures throughout the city. So there were over 40,000 riders who took part this year, which is absolutely incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing to see so many cyclists out on the roads there. And seeing images like this always makes me think how amazing it would be for more cities around the world to close their roads in this way for cyclists more often.
Yeah, they used to do it in Brussels. I've been riding around there before when it's been closed to traffic. Absolutely magnificent. Moving on, it appears that Eurobike is potentially in jeopardy. There's news emerged last week that two of its key partners have pulled out. So the world's biggest cycling trade show has long been an annual staple, with over 1,500 exhibitors in the bike industry travelling to the expo each year.
Yeah, there were further rumours too, with unconfirmed reports that Shimano, which is one of the biggest exhibitors, had cancelled hotel rooms for next year's show, with some brands starting to question the value of it, including the likes of Specialized and Scott actually had already pulled out. So it kind of does seem that the continuation of Eurobikes is on the rocks.
I personally think that would be a shame. But again, let us know in the comments below. Do you think this would be a big loss for the world of cycling?
Yeah, please do. Right, Dan, I know you're not massively keen on going bikepacking with me.
Oh, this is the bit where you think I'm going to enjoy a bikepacking trip. Go on then.
I think you would. Anyway, this might sell it to you. So the UK has just opened its first Boozy Bike Trail. I think the official name is the Rother Wine Triangle.
Have you made Boozy Bike Trail up, have you?
Right. But anyway, this has been dreamed up as a way of linking wine-tasting vineyards in Sussex, which is in the south of the UK. So trains and buses didn't quite work, cars out of the equation for obvious reasons, and the bike trail concept was born. Mm. So apparently it's the first of its kind in the UK. 7 vineyards, 2 days, what do you reckon?
I could probably be persuaded to take part in that encounter, although I don't think you should drink and ride either,
no,
personally.
Well, maybe we'll have to do like one vineyard a day, so 7 days. I was after a wild camp to keep the budget down.
Well, in wine tasting, aren't you supposed to spit it out a lot of the time anyway?
Oh, I have no idea.
No, I don't either. Really. I should probably move on because I've got no idea at all. But yeah, it does sound quite interesting. On the subject of wine, actually, this is a story I read which absolutely astounded me. So a 77-year-old man thankfully survived the crash off his bike near La Grande Combe in southern France recently after falling into a ravine. He then found himself stuck down there for 3 days. Calling for help, no one heard his cries, and despite the cold and damp, he managed to survive by eating the contents of his shopping that he'd been riding home with, including a few bottles of wine and some food as well. It's
an absolutely incredible story this. So he was discovered after a chance spotting by road workers, and he was rescued, thankfully, by rescue services. And doctors described it as a miracle that he managed to live through the ordeal, escaping just minor injuries and mild hypothermia.
It's an absolutely incredible story, that one,
yeah,
isn't it?
Unbelievable.
Well, thankfully, they found him after just 3 days. I mean, it must have felt like an eternity. Yeah, amazing. Next up, it is time for Hack/Bodge of the Week. And we're actually going to start with a response from one of last week's bodges, as we deemed it, from none other than Alistair Brownlee.
Hi, everyone at GCN. I have a very important message for you. I heard that you're not big fans of what Graham's daughter's done when she's using Crocs on the turbo. Being from Yorkshire, firstly, I think it's a fantastic economical solution. You know, why spend more money than we have to? And secondly, you know, don't mock it. This is where innovation starts. You never know where it might end up.
Now, Alistair mentioned there that he's a Yorkshireman, Connor. I can't help but think that he might have been paid to say that.
Under duress.
Yeah?
Under duress from behind the camera.
Quite possibly. Are you going to change your mind on the Crocs? I know you weren't on the GCN show last week, but it's got to remain a bod, surely. Yeah. Nice try, Alistair. Better luck next time. That was actually from that gravel burn race that I spoke to you about earlier. All right, the first one this week comes in from Matt. This is for you, Connor. Repurposed handlebar bag. I recently ordered a set of leg warmers, and Amazon, being the that paragon of retail that it is, sent me a random handlebar bag instead. It has 3 straps on the back attached to the handlebar and the head tube, and 2 clips on the sides so you can attach the strap to carry it like a handbag. Pretty standard stuff. I figured that this, plus a 1 litre seat bag I got recently, would allow me to take off the big pannier rack. I could keep the essentials in the seat bag and then bring the handlebar bag when I go to the city and need a lock. Unfortunately, I couldn't really get it to fit on my handlebars without a lot of interference with the brake and shifter line, so instead of attaching it to the bars, I hung it from the top tube, relocated the third Velcro strap to the handbag loop, and used that to secure the bag to my head tube. Not as good as a real frame bag, but not half bad either.
I think that's a hack. That looks good
to me. Well, what a surprise. I'd never have guessed you were going to say that was a hack.
I see, it's a definite hack. I mean, as long as it's not hitting your knees, that's the only downside sometimes to a frame bag, but I think that's brilliant. I like the elastic, because you get a jacket in there as well. Get a jacket between the bag and the
never
frame.
Never seen you so excited, Connor. I will go hack for that one as well. Do Amazon get orders that wrong that much? Leg warmers and then a handlebar bag turns up.
We had a weird thing with Amazon. They were just sending us random stuff that we hadn't ordered.
Nice.
Like all the time, just random, but it was all rubbish stuff.
In your name?
Yeah. I think it was some sort of scam. I couldn't figure it out though. But yeah, eventually it stopped.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, random story.
Cool story, bro.
I was waiting for you to say that.
I'm getting my own back because Si says that to me a lot. Right.
Right, this next one has been sent in by Holger. This is my frame protector in case the bike falls on its left side. It normally falls onto the rear through axle and the frame, which lies in the same plane. This is a cut-off 6mm Allen key with a rubber grommet that absorbs the impact.
So you've not seen this yet, Connor, but I think this is genius. So we're watching a video now. Little grommet goes in with a bit of rubber, so if the bike falls over on that side, protects the frame.
That's a good idea.
I just don't know how it doesn't fall out. I mean, I guess you're never swaying your bike that much, but it didn't look like it was wedged in that tightly.
It must have one of those little clips like the Allen keys do, right, where you kind of push them in and it stays quite secure.
Yeah.
So I guess if you, yeah.
Can you think of any downside to that? Well, you can't your leg on it or anything, are you? No, I think
really.
I think it looks great, personally. Yeah. If you can think of downsides, let us know in the comments section down below. But Connor and I, for the time being, unless persuaded otherwise by Alistair Brownlee or somebody else, are going to say hack. Right, James McClellan, 2 puncture, 1 plug. After finding a large nail had created both entry and exit holes in my tubeless tyre, I figured out I was able to use a single plug to get me going again.
That is impressive. That is impressive. Wow. It's a hack. If that's held and you fix that,
surely that wouldn't hold air in, would it? You reckon it would?
I think it would.
You've got more experience with tyre plugs than I have.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got enough sealant in there and you get the plug in, it should. I don't know if I'd trust it when I get home. I think I'm changing the tyre.
No, Sir Sherlock.
But yeah.
I mean, if that worked, that is unbelievable. Yeah, fair play, James. Hack from both of us.
Nice one.
Roadside hack, as long as the tyre's been replaced since.
Yeah, it just looks as if that's going to just fire out sideways if it weakens it. Right, next up, this has been sent in by Alex Colwell. This is a 3D printed phone holder. Needed a solution to mount my phone on my aero bars when on the kicker on Zwift, so I designed and 3D printed a holder that slides with a friction fit over the existing out front mount for my Wahoo.
This is one of the neatest things I've ever seen in my life, I think. Look at that.
That is impressive. So, So it brings the phone even further up as well. It's got a proper little leg to it.
Yeah. Well, we haven't done a very good job of describing these hacks and bodges to podcast listeners, actually, but let's try and do it for this. It's like a shim. Well, it's already been described. It's a shim that neatly fits over the Wahoo Aero mount, and it's kind of curved with a cradle to rest your phone on above. I think that's incredible.
That's
a hack from me.
That's a brilliant hack. There's some incredible 3D printed bits that get sent into the show.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, you get your phone right where you need it to be when you're on the old kicker, and you can just take it off straight away as well. Nice.
Yeah. Well, it's a hack from both of us by the sounds of it, Alex. Well done to all of you today. If you'd like to get involved in this part of the show, globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. You can find a link to that in the comment section below, in the description below.
Caption competition time now, and it is your chance to win a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you have to do is send in hopefully witty caption to one of the photos of the week. Last week, we actually had this one, which was... Where was this from again, Dan?
This was from the finish line of the Queen Stage of the Tour of Huangji, the last World Tour race of the year. It's a duration of climb, Connor, that leaves you absolutely spent if you go flat out. I think
like
about
it.
Like 8 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Although our 3 minute one was quite hard, wasn't it? The National Hill Climb Challenge. Anyway, the winner this week is Magic Knight 464, who put, "When the thought of Cyan leg warmers and no shorts hits you."
I like that. I do like that.
Won't mean anything to you unless you watch last week's GCN show. I don't know how to say this about something a bit weird. The thought of Cyan leg warmers and no shorts hit me one day last week, like randomly. I was like, oh, why did you think of that? Anyway. Get in touch with us on Facebook with your address and we will get that sent out to you soon, Magic Knight. This week's photo is from aforementioned Singapore Criterium. It's Jasper Philipson dipping his head into what looks to be an ice bath. I'll get you started. 6'7".
I don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't either, Connor, but my 14-year-old seems to laugh every time somebody says 6'7". That's some sort of new thing for youths. anyway, I'll get you started with an actual caption. Here goes then. That's what I said. Looks like. It's a bit... missed that last bit. That's what I said. Looks like. I mean, it's one of my worst efforts from the last 13 years, but I couldn't think of anything better apart from 6'7". So do your best in the comment section down below. Pick a winner next week. Just before we let you know what's coming up on the channel this week, we've picked out a few of our favourite comments from the last week's worth of videos. Starting as ever with a few from underneath last week's GCN show, which was 7 mistakes we continue to make. Scrobosaurus put, best intro ever. Nothing like seeing Dan being chased by a semi-rabid fan. Steve 151079, but that was the best welcome to the GCN show ever. So once again, our massive thank you to Brad for sending that in. Was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that was brilliant. Kim B 101 said, the unwritten rule about telling someone about their bike shorts so that you only tell them at the end of the ride. They can't do anything earlier and you just ruin the ride.
For those of you who didn't watch last week's show, this is talking about riders who use overly worn shorts, which are a bit see-through from behind, but you can't tell yourself because they're not see-through before you stretch them as you put them on.
Yeah.
And you can't see them once they're on from behind. An anecdote about that, actually, from Kevin MacArthur. I discovered my bike shorts were sheer as a pair of women's nylons when I boarded a crowded bus. In brackets, I had to portage a tunnel on the motorway by taking public transport along a brief stretch of road and dropped one of my bus fare coins and bent over to pick it up. I was regaled with a full-throated collective gasp from the poor bastards seated throughout the length of the bus, and all conversation stopped in response. When I got home, I asked if my wife and my shorts were wore thin and bent over in the same way as the bus incident. She roared with laughter as I realised I could never take that bus again. Thankfully, this occurred before the prevalent use of cell phone video and thus avoided a cherished place in the cloud. Beautifully written as well. I did chuckle when I read that.
Oh man. It happened to me at the swimming pool once. It was just like they ripped.
Oh!
I was stuck. I had to get out of the pool and get to the changing rooms.
Have you ever been to one of those French swimming pools where you have to wear speedos? You're not allowed to wear shorts. What's that about?
I don't know.
I went to one once in the summer and I must have just crashed at a race. So I had like scars everywhere. I was obviously super skinny and massive tan lines. And so I had to wear these stupid budgie smugglers that I had to buy from a vending machine just outside the swimming pool. And I had shades on so people couldn't see my eyes. But as I walked along with my head straight, I was looking around, there were just lots of teenagers pointing and laughing as I walked through. Anyway.
Moving on.
Yes. Kruachan put, the cycling nerds leaving size parties at 9 are only going because they've been invited to a chain waxing party at Ollie's. Very good.
Oh, I love it. There's some brilliant comments under the 30 Days of Zwift video, which we put up at the weekend. This was kind of the latest in the series where we got our kind of beginners here at GCN HQ to try something different in the sport. And it's been amazing, actually, to see Naomi and Rosa to like just could enjoy cycling and see their journey through the sport. Some brilliant comments under that piece. David van der Want commented, Naomi has some serious power, which I can attest to. Yeah, it was incredible. Jed Wanmar said, I'm a simple GCN fan. I see more Naomi and Rosa, and it's an automatic thumbs up. Some of the best content in cycling YouTube. And then Matt Watt, I got a bit of stick for my coaching in terms of the actual race in my my use of the power-ups. I do apologise, did I? The heat of battle, I got distracted. But Matt highlights this, said, what a waste of draft and boost. Colin needs some lessons on Zwift racing tactics.
I also saw this one, actually, from Aaron Trigus, who put, knowing how heavy those Zwift ride boxes were, there's no way Connor could carry those, especially after seeing him try to take a weighted vest off. Less said about the sandals, the better, too. Yeah, some very complimentary comments about Naomi and Rosa, less so about Connor. Although, we have picked out some very complimentary comments from underneath the hill climb video, one for each presenter that turned up. So happy days. I chose this one, Connor, from Jamie Farrell. But Connor's enthusiasm and pleasure in the event is infectious.
Oh, thank you. Chapeau. Appreciate that.
That's all right, mate.
Yeah, and cycling on and off roads, the best thing on GTN lately is seeing Dan enjoying bike rides again.
Thank you very much.
I can agree with that too.
John Poon, but Ollie's ability is so underrated. Of the GTN presenters, he's not a former pro. Athletically, just so strong. And as much as it pains me to admit it, yes, you're right.
You are right, yeah. But it's been great to see him as well, actually. He put some training for that hill climb.
He did, yeah. Right? He was determined to win.
He was determined, yeah. We winded him up in the build-up, but yeah. Crisis in Lycra said, loving this type of content and GCN engaging with grassroots of the cycling community. It's great to see the presenters who have competed at higher levels enjoying the local scene. Mm.
Quite a lot of comments about the two Skoda estates that we used up there as well, which I enjoyed reading. Meanwhile, underneath Sai's video, never fall out of love with cycling again, Mike Marin Ojax, but this video is a perfect example of why GCN has been so successful. Not technical, not preachy, not anything but a good friend. And that's what Sai has become to all of us on the other side of the screen, sharing the reasons behind his love for our sport. Thank you very much. Great that although Si couldn't be on the show this week, he has got into the script and posted comments about himself as well.
Stan Jarrett 6712 said, my hack for going out, even if I don't really feel like it, is to prepare as much as you can the day before, so that if you don't go, your house is full of stuff that makes you feel guilty and needs to be stowed away again without being used. That's a good point.
I think even if you don't feel guilty for leaving stuff out, having not been out for the ride that you were supposed to do, the mere fact of getting everything ready the night before makes it so much easier to get out on the day anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure.
I tend to put my leg warmers on the night before, so all I've got to do is put my shorts on the following morning. I'm joking, of course. Right, coming up on the channel this week, Thursday, are you sitting comfortably? Probably not, because it turns out an enormous number of cyclists are not sitting on their saddle correctly. So Alex is here to tell you everything that you need to know about that. And on Saturday, really looking forward to you seeing this one. So lots of you are going to remember that the World Championships in Rwanda, the first ever British male winner of the junior race was Harry Hudson, just before the National Hill Climb Champs. I got to visit him at his home in the Peak District and take a ride with him and then do an interview with him afterwards in his house, which was fantastic. So that'll be out on Saturday.
Yeah, looking forward to watching that one. He absolutely flew up that hill as well at the National Champs.
He did some open... Well, I won't give too much away. I'll give this bit away. He did some sort of openers the day before because he'd just been on a camp with Lidl Trek's development squads, hasn't ridden that much. And I couldn't even keep up with him on a 15-second sprint. He weighs 58 kilos. I did on the second one because it was cross headwind and he didn't put me in the gutter. Anyway, yeah. Gosh. That'll be out on Saturday.
Yeah, and then on Sunday we've got Could Your Gravel Bike Be Your Only Bike? This is myself and Alex, actually. Just debating whether just having one gravel bike, and could you survive on that? And have kind of two bikes for one. Is that possible or not?
I mean, there's no way that Alex could survive on one bike alone, is there? Yeah. He just loves different bikes so much.
I tried to convince him, whether I did or not, you'll find out in the video.
Great stuff. Well, thank you very much for watching yet another GCN show. We'll be back again with you this time next week.